Welcome back to the Motley Fool Radio Show, and now it's time to go to the Fool Phones. The Fool Phone line's always open for your financial questions and comments. I'm joined once again by Dayana Yoakum, our resident personal finance expert here at the Motley Fool. Dayana, happy summer to you.
Thank you, David, to you too.
Neither one of us really tans naturally, I can see. It's unfortunate. The phone lines are open, 866-NPR-FOOL.
To Redlands, California, where Anne is on the line. Hi, Anne.
Hello.
How are you?
Good, thank you.
Good. What's on your mind today?
We have a interesting situation coming up.
We love those. Okay.
Both my husband and I are quitting our jobs and selling our real estate and moving out of Southern California to Colorado. I do have a part-time consulting business that will come with us, but that will be our primary source of income, at least for a while. And basically, we have 290-some thousand in our retirement, and we'll be walking away with about $340,000 in cash and zero debt.
Mm-hmm.
And we're trying to figure out what to do with it. I mean, obviously, some of it will be used for our living expenses initially, but, you know, obviously not all of it either. And we're trying to figure out what to do with that lump of cash.
So you're quitting California?
Yes.
Why is that, Ann?
We're off to sunshine and more open space and clean air and more outdoor activities, and I guess it comes down to lifestyle.
And do you have confidence that, assuming your husband wants to be employed again, that he will find a place, something to do there? Yes.
Yes, absolutely. And the job market there appears to be hiring locals more than out-of-state people, probably for a reason to keep us out.
But the Southwest is such a strong buy in my mind in terms of the growth that we can expect of it in the next 20 years, that whether it's employment, real estate, et cetera, Las Vegas, Arizona, everything in and around and between, I just think that's a great place to be.
And part of the reason, particularly for me, that we're interested in Colorado is exactly that, the Front Range population, which starts in the south in Pueblo and extends all the way to the north.
Sure.
And Cheyenne, Wyoming, expected to double in the next 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I do plan to get my real estate license, although I'm not so interested in the residential real estate market as commercial.
Okay, so we all agree, unless, Dayana, you want to disagree, that this is a good move for Anne and her husband.
It sounds like a good move.
So the question is, well, what exactly is your question, Anne? You're asking what to do with that, if my math is right, $630,000, how to deploy that. Obviously, you're going to be buying a place, right?
Initially, no. We're planning to rent to get to know the area better, to decide where we'd like to live.
Smart.
That's a good idea.
We will roll over my husband's 401k into an IRA.
Very good.
We'll keep the retirement money where it is, which is in Vanguard accounts. So basically, it's about, you know, the $340,000 in cash. We want to maintain as much of that as we can for a down payment on our next home.
Mm-hmm.
There's just a lot of variables. We don't have employer-sponsored health insurance anymore, so we'll be paying COBRA each month. You know, we're setting aside money for our capital gains tax on one of our properties and tuition and child care for our son and moving expenses and those things. But there'll still be a lot left over. And, you know, instead of putting it in the checking account, I'm wondering if there's something smart we can do with it for the short term, which I guess would be a year or less.
Okay. This is the classic life change equals money change issue. A big life change for you and your family and a big financial change going hand in hand with that. I think the first thing you need to do is figure out what your initial expenses are going to be, and that's going to be your short and medium term budget right there. Figure out how much cash you're going to need for that and make sure that that cash is easily accessible. Now, where is this chunk of change sitting right now? You said it's in your checking account?
Some of it's in a money market account. Mm-hmm. Some of it's in a savings account. And some of it's in escrow, closing soon.
Mm-hmm. The best thing to, you know, a good rule of thumb is as far as like how to first access that money is to always go with the money that you're not going to pay a penalty to get to. So a CD, if you cash out before it's time, or some money market accounts even, you're going to pay a fee to get to that money. So you want to avoid that.
I think with the money that you're going to be putting down on the down payment on your new house, if you start looking in a year, you know, always budget more time than you think to eventually find and settle. But whatever that amount of money is that you're expecting, I would certainly keep that invested in something like a CD, something like an 18-month CD. The longer you sequester it away in a CD, the better the interest rate you get. But regardless, we're not talking about a tremendously exciting interest rate here, a couple percentage points. for your pains, but that's not the purpose of this down payment money, right? It's for a house.
Right.
We don't want to gamble this or shoot for a higher return and take more risks. So with that money, I would make sure you know roughly how much it is, and I would put that off in a CD.
Would it make sense to stack the CDs, basically get a 3-month, a 6-month, and a 9-month or whatever?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I bet if you called a lot of if you talked to a lot of professional financial advisors, they said yeah, they would say yes, do that. But it sounds to me like this whole move is about simplifying your life, and frankly, stacking the CDs for the little bit of gain, for that sliver of a percentage rate that you're going to get for doing that, yet you have to keep the paperwork and the separate accounts and all that, probably not going to be worth it unless you can really say your time is worth that extra return that mm-hmm. you're getting. I would say, you know what, go for that midterm, go for the 18 months or the 12 month CD, leave it there, and then when that expires, go ahead and roll it over to the next thing.
Yeah, my time's probably more worth getting the next business started.
We agree. In general, you have to make sure that the effort that you put into managing your financial life is bearing a reward that is proportional to the effort that you're making. I agree with Dayana. It sounds as if you all are looking for some sunshine here, so let's not let some extra clouds roll in and complicate our life by stacking CDs, in effect taking your money and saying, hey, we'll put this much in a 3-month, this much in a 6-month, for those not familiar with this much in a 12-month. Yes, you could do that. You might get a little bit more return, right, because you're getting a little bit more for the longer-term money you're putting in CDs.
But from what I've seen
but
lately,
I don't think it's worth the
yeah,
effort.
Not a ton.
And I hope that was helpful.
Very helpful.
Congratulations on a wonderful, it sounds like a wonderful move to Colorado. What a beautiful state it is. Thanks for the call and have fun.
Great. Thank you very much.
The phone number is 866-NPR-FOOL, and we're going to Dallas, Texas, where Stephen is on the line. Hi, Stephen.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm doing pretty well.
Good. What's on your mind today?
Well, about February of 2000, I bought several stocks through a broker.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that right there, because February of 2000 was just about the all-time NASDAQ top. But keep going.
Well, I wish you had told me that in January of 2000.
I wish I'd known myself.
And I have kept some of those that I bought at that time, but they have lost value over 60%.
Okay.
And my question is, should I keep them and hope that they'll come back somewhat, or just go ahead and sell them and take the hit and put the money where it would actually earn something?
Let me ask you this. How are you doing in the ulcer category since making these purchases?
The stomach lining question.
Well, stomach lining's fine. Depression hits occasionally.
Okay. Well, we're all dying to know. What are the stocks?
Qualcomm, although it has come back recently a bit, it's only 48% below purchase value. But Texas Instruments and Nokia, mm-hmm. both at about 65% down from the purchase price. Mm.
Ouch, ouch, and ouch.
Yes, it is. Thank you.
Well, we do feel for you.
What do I do if I have a losing position? What I like to think about is, okay, I'm sitting on a losing investment. Is there an approach to take? Is there a generic answer to the my stock's down 60% question? I'm going to attempt an answer to that question.
Well, you've already passed step one, which is the beat yourself up.
Oh, okay, I can stop now?
Okay, yes.
Yeah.
We're done with
years.
That.
Okay,
right. And so I think that the best way to think of any investment, and I'm going to say whether it's a losing or a winning investment, is not to look backward, which is what all of us do. Human nature has us looking backward. But don't look backward at the 60% loss or maybe the 100% gain in some other cases.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, just look at what you own right now and say, is my money, in my mind anyway, optimally invested, either both in that company and or just across my stock portfolio if I have one? Is my money where I want it to be over the next 5 years? We already know what happened in the last 5 years. Truth is, you bought some pretty good companies. It was just at the one absolute worst time to buy them, in retrospect.
Yes.
I mean, these are good, strong companies. And you know, had you bought them 5 years before that and added systematically, you would have been still buying some in February 2000, but you might well be showing a profit today. So that's one of the reasons we at the Motley Fool advocate, where possible, building up positions over time, what we call dollar cost averaging, just regularly inserting more money into a given number of stock positions so that you kind of smooth out in the end what you paid for them, right?
In this case, it's also called pain cost averaging.
You're right. But so you know, you bought high some of the time, but then you bought low some of the time. You made a long-term commitment to those companies. And in fact, as you yourself know, Stephen, having watched Qualcomm bounce back some, if you had been systematically adding to Qualcomm since February of 2000, you might have a little bit different story to tell, because you would have been buying low at some points and watching the stock come back some. So you would have smoothed out and lowered your cost basis, if that makes sense. Does that make sense?
It does, and it did ease the pain a bit because I had bought some more Qualcomm.
Okay. So I really believe, in the end, the question about whether you should hold a stock or not in most cases relates very little to what it's already done for you. We need to disconnect whether we're up 120% or down 60% from our decision right now to own Qualcomm stock today, you know, June of 2005. So I think and we're not going to answer that on this call. This is up to you to answer, but you have to ask yourself, you know, are those my three favorite stocks? And it's not about how they perform for you. We're talking about the next 5 years. Are those my three favorite stocks? Maybe you still like one of them. Maybe two of them you've sort of psychologically disconnected from, and you admit to yourself, let's say, that you don't really know the business that well because maybe you don't work in that industry. And darn it, you know, you feel like you know Starbucks better.
Stephen, it's human nature. A lot of people like to hold on to stocks hoping that they'll come back so they don't have to believe they lost any cash. But we encourage you not to think that way. Your money could come back, but perhaps you could do better elsewhere and maybe a lot better. So I think that's the point here. Mm-hmm. Don't look backwards too much, especially in a situation like this. Unfortunately, timing wasn't great here. But, hey, lesson learned, and let's look for the future and for better investments.
Well, that sounds very good and really hits close to the heart of my question, the information that both of you have given me. And neither of you, I guess, has an investor's time machine I could set.
Wish we did. What we do, though, is we do believe in finding good companies, buying regularly, and holding them over the long term. You're going to be buying high sometimes, but then again, you'll also be buying low, and patience is often rewarded in the market. Stephen, thank you very much for your call.
Thanks for your help.
And that wraps up the Fool Phones for this week.
The phone number is 866-NPR-FOOL. Give us a call with your financial question or comment, 866-677-3665.